This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Beauty Counter, Ember, and this is Elle. We are happy to have them on board. So happy.
Thank you guys for making it possible. We love you.
Yeah.
Hi.
Well, hello, everyone. Hello.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Robin.
I'm Jamie. We're your hosts.
We're back from our very first dark week on our new schedule from Thanksgiving. Did you enjoy your time off?
Yeah.
Do we call it time off?
No.
My kids were home.
No, it's not time off.
My kids were off all week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, mine, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they had school.
All week plus the Friday before. For parent-teacher conferences.
Oh, wow. They really screw you over with that.
I was running around with my kids in tow like a lot.
I'm sure. I know. We had to record something with your son like wandering around the building.
Yeah. And every once in a while he would come in and I would just be like, you good? You good? We're in the middle. Can you go over there? Go over there. Go sit over there. Okay, great. Great.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Wait, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, really?
It is.
I feel like no one ever says that.
Oh, I love Thanksgiving.
What do you love about it?
I just love that you get together with family or chosen and family. Mm-hmm. People bring food. Everybody is gathered around. You always sit down to eat. Not always, but for the most part, it's like, I love the tradition of having like a nice big meal with people you love. Mm. And there's wine. So
okay. All right. There, now you got me.
Yeah. I've had some really wonderful Thanksgivings. Well, I love Thanksgiving.
We didn't do this before Thanksgiving. Should we do it after? Should we do one thing we're thankful for, Jamie?
Yes.
All right. I'll say this. I'm thankful for all the support and the outpouring of people who have helped make this little podcast something.
And there's more and more coming. I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful for this podcast.
Well, that, by the way, that almost like, that's like a very nice segue into like, mm-hmm. people can join our Patreon community.
Yes.
We've had like sort of an outpouring of in this last like couple weeks of people joining our Patreon community.
I know. Thanks for joining, guys. We have all kinds of extra bonus content like parenting tips, fertility talk, and general idiocy
behind the scenes
Robin
content.
And Jamie, which is so, you
basically
know.
Basically Tuesday. Well, so we got some new sponsors to thank this week.
We do. We have Olivia Kelly, Myrna Bowen, and Tori Blue, and Rebecca Jacob, and Alice Roll. There's a lot of ands in there. Oh my
God. Well, I didn't mean to put all the ands in the script. Because what just happened is people kept adding more. I know. People kept sponsoring. I kept being like, and. But wait, we had one more patron supporter.
We did. A person by the name of...
It was like Rosala O'Donnell.
Rosiala O'Donnell?
I mean...
Sounds interesting.
It sounds like a really interesting name. Does it sound like someone who might be sort of famous that might be on the podcast next week?
Maybe.
I wonder.
I don't know. I wonder. No spoiler alerts here.
Well, if you're just listening for the first time, you better start subscribing because maybe somebody named Rosala O'Donnell might be on the podcast next week. Maybe. Let's see.
But let's get to this week's guest.
Let's cut to it. Yeah.
Oh, we didn't tell you how you can go to Patreon.
Oh, we didn't.
No, you can go to patreon.com/
Ovaries Talk.
Ovaries Talk. So go do that. Join us. Join us. I have to stop
every time,
doing that.
Every time. You need a new Join Us song.
Oh, there's many.
No, maybe not today. Let's think about it for the next
intro. Let's talk about our guest.
Okay.
This week's guest, Mary T. Keene.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's just like, she leaves me without words. I love her so much.
Oh my God, beautiful woman.
She's a foster and adoptive parent. And she also happens to be the executive director of an organization called You Gotta Believe.
Yeah, You Gotta Believe exists to deliver on the promise made to youth in foster care that they will actually leave with a family. It's
amazing. It's one of the like precious few organizations in the U.S. and the only organization in New York City metro area that just limits its practice to finding permanent parents and families for young adults, teens, and preteens in the foster care system. Come on.
It's the forgotten ones.
It really is.
These are the forgotten kids. Yes. Their motto is, it's never too late for family, which is really wonderful.
I mean, that's beautiful, right?
And Mary, who's coming in to talk to us.
Mother Mary
is living this principle.
Let's get her in here.
Get her in, Mary. Hi. Hello. Welcome.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Oh, my God.
It is so nice to have you here.
It really is. Thanks for coming all the way into our little makeshift studio.
Where did you come in from?
I live in Yonkers.
Oh, Yonkers.
Yeah.
Mary. Can you give us the elevator pitch about you and your family?
So that's an interesting idea. I actually never do an elevator pitch about me and my family.
Well, something that comes up in general conversation.
I know. I try to dodge a lot of it. I never admit to how many kids I have.
Oh,
that's the first issue. And it, you know, for part of it is that even when I'm training and stuff like that, I really don't. I try to dodge that number because then immediately people write me off as some kind of nut job.
Like, so, are you like the crazy cat lady of kids?
Yeah. So I said, you know, I really prefer not to say the number because, you know, I just have a large family. And
can we make you say the number?
And
now
then, I'll say the number. But then people look at them too. You know, they're all different colors and stuff. And I say, well, yeah, it was a miracle. You know, that's how they happen. And that happened recently with a tenant of mine because she saw my son-in-law for the first time. She was a new tenant and she saw my son-in-law. And I introduced him, you know, this is my son-in-law. And she said, oh, and she's a black woman and he's black. And she says, oh, he's a different color. I said, yeah, he's a miracle. You should see my daughter because she was even darker. But, you know, it was just a funny moment. But I do claim 14 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe.
See what I mean? There, you just dismiss me now.
No, not at all.
I think because, I am some sort of nut job.
Because, Mary, there's a story behind this.
Oh, there's a big story.
But yeah. I'm in awe. Like, yes. I'm like, Jamie and I are barely holding it together.
I can't even hold it together.
So what you just did is within 3 minutes of this podcast, you put us to shame.
I don't recommend it for people. It is too much. But it just happened. It just, you know, yeah. And somehow it snuck up on me. And it was funny because I was, it really did. I was reflecting earlier today.
Do.
Yeah, they just do. They sneak up. And they're like potato chips, actually. The kids that I love potato chips. So I have more potato chips than I do kids.
You can never have just one.
No, you can't.
No, you can't. You got to eat the whole bag. Can't.
So seriously, kids that I work with over the years, they're just so precious. Mm-hmm. You know, they really are. They're all in foster care and stuff like that. But they just really draw me in. And it really was irresistible. So I had a big house and it had, well, originally it had 12 bedrooms. It was really
an old
mini mansion.
Yeah.
Right? I had to add a 13th bedroom at one point.
With, because of with all the kids.
Yeah. So anyway, at one point.
Might some of them share a room?
They probably were. That?
Some of them did, yeah. Actually. Some of them did. And they weren't all living there at the same time, right. And things like that. But so at a lot of them found, you know, they got their own places and they started to move out and stuff over the years. So at one point then, only a couple were still living there. And I was renting rooms and everything. And I said, no, yeah, I don't really want to do that. But also because I continue to work with kids, I was so tempted all the time. And I said, you know, the only way to avoid doing this is to sell the house. So yeah, I won't take any more kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was it. There was no way for me to not want to take more kids. And to this
because
day.
Because you had the space.
Yeah, I had the space. And nature hates a void. So, you know, it would just keep filling up. So I'm technically, in a one-bedroom apartment, but it has a lot of space.
Yes, so you've converted it. This is the true New Yorker in you.
So I do have space when there is an emergency, yes. And one of the kids has to stay there and stuff like that.
Hey, Robin,
mm-hmm.
We all use makeup, lotion, shampoo, sunscreen every day, right? Or at least we should.
We try.
Let's be honest. The makeup doesn't always happen. But do you have any idea what's in them?
No, of course
no.
not.
No. And get this. This is scary. The government hasn't passed a major federal law regulating the personal care industry since 1938.
That's frightening.
I know. That means companies are allowed to use questionable ingredients and make their own judgments about safety. Scary.
Great.
But listen, there's at least one company that is making better decisions. Introducing Beauty Counter.
Oh, I love Beauty Counter.
Me too.
I'm wearing their brow gel right now.
Oh, nice. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Well, listen, today, Beauty Counter is the leading clean beauty brand. They create innovative and high-performing products that are safer and cleaner than even their like-minded competitors.
Well, I mean, like, let's break down what do they mean by clean.
Please do.
Okay, it means that basically over 1,500 questionable ingredients are never used in Beauty Counter's formulations. They call it their never list.
Ooh, a never list. I like that. I also love that they make products for the whole family, mm-hmm. and they have a rigorous ingredient selection process. They educate people on questionable and harmful ingredients to avoid, and they advocate for more health protective laws for the beauty industry,
oh,
which
so
is
important.
So important.
I love it. Mm-hmm. And they have like from moisturizers to makeup, cleansers to sunscreen.
They have everything.
Yeah, they're at the forefront of using clean ingredients to create products that are effective and really work.
Yeah, I personally love the Dew Skin Tinted Moisturizer. Mm-hmm. I use it every day. I get a little sun protection, a little sheer coverage.
Love it. I love it.
I know.
And listen, for our listeners, if you're new to Beauty Counter, now is the time to head over to beautycounter.com to check out the special holiday offers before they're gone.
That's beautycounter.com. No promo code necessary. Just clean makeup, skincare, and gifts for everyone you love.
Get your holiday stuff over
Do
there,
it. Oh
folks.
My God, stocking stuffers.
Do it.
Yeah.
I wish this is time for our YouTube channel, Jamie, where we're on camera, because I wish people could see you. Like, there's just like a love that's mm-hmm. like, that's coming off of you.
There
that's
is.
Really palpable. So,
it really is me. I avoided it for years, actually, because my ex had no interest in having kids or, you know, she has her own son, one son, and she never would have gone down this path. So, but when I reflect on it, when I was younger, I always wanted a very, very large family.
Mm. Really Did you come large. From a large family?
I have three brothers, so it's not that large. My parents both came from very large families, mm-hmm. 8, 10 or something like that. But then when I was about 16, I guess, I wound up having to take care of my niece and nephew, who were 2 and 6 months.
Oh, really? Having to take care
yeah,
of
them? Yeah. I had to take care of them. So what I learned, it was really a great lesson. What I learned is that I don't like little kids.
And that's a good lesson.
And thank God I had it before I went and had any kids.
Right.
And then it took me a while to even figure out that I was gay and stuff. So mm-hmm. When I figured that out, then ultimately I got involved and I was in a long-term relationship with someone who clearly was not going to have any kids.
Right. Can I ask you, how old were you when you figured
27.
Out that you were gay?
27. 27 that I admitted it.
That you mm-hmm. Right. You
yeah,
had
I knew before that.
Yeah, you had.
Yeah. I admitted mm-hmm. it at 27.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Takes a while.
I know.
It's not easy.
You get there when you get there. Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I got there when she pushed me over. Somebody, you know, pushed me over the edge. And I said, okay, I like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, exactly. But this was a very different time, too, for
yes.
you when,
yeah,
you,
it was
when
very,
you came out.
It was very different.
Even for us, it's such a different time.
It's different
time.
Than it is
yes.
now.
Yes.
For now, yeah. It's still difficult now. But
yeah. No, we're not saying it's not difficult. It just happens a lot younger.
It's different. It happens younger. They're taking they're more like open
same sex partners to the prom. And it was like, right. It was not,
that was never. That was not happening. Never happened. Even when we were kids. No. And, you know, so. No.
So once I figured out after a while, I wound up in this long-term relationship who was not going to have, not interested in any kids and stuff. So I said, okay, so that's my life. You know, I'm fine. I can move on. But luckily, after about 13 years, she dumped me. That was,
best thing that ever happened to you.
That was my lucky break. That was my lucky break. Wow. So we celebrate our anniversary.
Where is she now? Can we Google stalk her?
No, yeah. I love her. I love her. No
more. Oh, you're still friends.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So we celebrate our anniversary. So it's 24 years.
Of breaking up?
Yeah. Yeah. She did it 2 days before my birthday. She's such.
Wow.
She's good really job. Knows how to get in there.
She
yeah.
was, yeah, she yeah. was not.
Yeah, no.
Usually you wait through the holiday or whatever's coming up.
No.
After Christmas.
My birthday's in October, so it's before all the holidays.
Oh, right before it all. Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that's a tough
she knows
time.
How to get you. So
yeah. She was done.
She stuck it to you. When you're done, you're done.
Yeah, but she wasn't really done. I think she was trying to teach me a lesson, but I didn't learn the lesson she wanted me to learn, so I learned another lesson. So anyways, when I felt better, I started to do a lot of volunteer work with teens because I've always loved teens. I think it's a priceless age. It's precious. And you can go either way at that point. So I started to do some volunteer work and I was working with a lot of queer kids and it came out that a lot of them were in foster care and stuff. So, you know, I started to think about that and that was like a double whammy. At the same time, professionally, I wound up visiting what is a residential treatment center, which is where they're old orphanages really up in Westchester. And there are maybe 200 kids on most of these campuses. And I went there to do some grant writing actually with my business partner. And it just struck me like all of these kids here with nobody, like no family, nobody loves them. They had a roof over their head. They had food, they had clothing and stuff like that. But I said, being a teen is so difficult to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then to be living in, you know, a place like that. And then working with the kids in the other volunteer activities, I just said, I'm in a position now I can do something about this. And I have to. I can't walk away. So I said, let me get licensed. And
To be a foster care.
Yeah, to be a foster parent. And at the same time, I started looking for a house. And so one day after a meditation session with my Buddhist, I walked down the block where I had my car. And behind the fence and all this overgrowth, I see a sign, house for sale. And I look, and it's huge, huge Victorian. And I said, that's not a multiple family. But let me find out about it. So I took the number. I said, I'm going to call. I go back to my house. My niece was there. And my niece knew I was looking for a house. So she has a penny saver in her hand. And she said, look what I just saw in the penny saver. And she points to another house, but on the same page as the house I had just seen. I said, okay. So I called. I said, this is really not what I'm looking for, but can I see the house? And it was a mess. It was, you know, really needed a lot of work and everything. So I said, okay, I'm buying it.
I mean, what's going through your head though? Like, so I'm going to buy this huge house. I'm going to fill it up with
kids. And I'm going to fill it up with kids.
You did. You
went
there right
away. I had no intention.
Your path was clear.
I got off the multiple family.
This is not a rental property.
No, it was not a rental property. I said, no, that's what I got to do. And I'm going to get licensed and I'm interested in, I'm only going to take lesbian girls, teenagers. Oh. That was my goal. I get them out of care. Because for me, being gay and being in care was like a double whammy. It's even more difficult, you know.
Did you feel
kids.
Like you were doing something for like a younger version of yourself or what? Like what?
You know, it's interesting. I never thought it, because I had a family and stuff like that. So it was just the idea that these kids didn't have a family. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I just said, I'm going to help them. And actually, originally I thought I'm going to have like my own little group home. And I even spoke to somebody in the field. Gary Mallon is his name. He's quite well known in the field. Doing, and I said, you know, I want to do this. I think I'm going to start a group home for lesbian teens and stuff like that. He said, you're a little crazy. But but he had started a group home for kids in the city, for gay kids in the city. So I said, I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. So I got licensed. At the same time, I was fixing up, my brother and other people were fixing up the house because it needed a lot of work.
I mean, you bought this house before you were even licensed.
Yeah. because you had to have a place.
You had to have it to show to get.
Yeah. So we worked on fixing it, and I was doing the classes. The agency was thrilled that, you know, what my intentions were. The woman who ultimately did my home study.
Sure, because they were like, look how many kids we can jam in this house.
Yes. Yeah. And they liked the idea that even that I was looking for, you know, that I was a lesbian looking for lesbians. So there was never, I found it sort of strange that there was never any concern about that.
Mm-hmm. I wondered that too.
That's the beautiful thing in this.
Never was any concern expressed.
Especially, like, what year was this?
Really got my first kids in 90. So it was still a lot of concern on my part, but the agency didn't seem to express any concern.
Well, they wanted these kids to have, you know, if especially there's somebody that's offering some kind of teens, guidance for these girls,
like,
who might
be
floundering.
How many people are saying, I want teens?
Right.
You know,
well, right.
Gay, imagine.
Teens,
gay
how many teens. How many people are saying, I want lesbians?
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
so
seriously.
So actually, before I wound up with the city, I called, because I live in Yonkers, I called Westchester County Social Services to get licensed by them, possibly. But I said what I wanted. I said, you know, I'm really interested in lesbian teens. So they said, we don't have any.
So yes, you do.
I said, okay. So then they told me, we have teens with babies. So I said, well, okay, that's not what I want. So bye. So let me go to the city. So I went to the city, got licensed. They were all excited. I think the woman who did my home study used it as her master's thesis or something like that, because it was just so exciting that I was interested in all these kids. So then when I'm licensed, the house is finished and ready. So I tell the agency, okay, so I'm ready. What do you got? Well, we don't have any lesbians right now.
That's hilarious.
That's actually the best quote.
We don't have any lesbians right now.
So, will you take a straight kid? So, and I always say this. I said, well, it's really not their fault. This is, you know, we gotta be accepting. The world is a big place. We have to love everybody.
It's a rainbow.
So I said,
didn't choose to be straight.
It's not their fault. So we have a 15-year-old girl who is in a crisis center in Westchester, and she's being discharged. It's only a 21-day program. So I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what they were talking about in terms of
a crisis center.
I was going to
ask you, what does that mean?
Now I know the place very well. So she was in some sort of crisis in her other home. She was removed from a foster home because of her behaviors, and she was sent to a crisis center to help her stabilize, I guess, was the intention.
Right.
So I said, okay. I was just so eager to get started with somebody.
I'm filling my house.
I got a big house. I want to fill it up. So
with problems. Send them my way.
So they bring her. And to this day, and it's
your first.
In 2000, February 16th, my Valentine's Day present, February 16th, 2000. So they bring her. And to this day, we're not sure that they even came in the house. Now, maybe they did. But we think
they're like, open the door, threw her out, went honk honk.
We think that they sort of said, here she is, here's Jennifer, that's her name, here's Jennifer, good luck, or something like that. That was probably a bigger conversation than that, but I don't know.
How old was she?
15. Mm-hmm. She came on, you know, she looked around the house.
She's like, this is a big house.
Where's the craft room?
This is a damn big house. So I didn't really know what I was doing. So I'm just trying to make this little girl comfortable and try to get to know her and stuff. So we just spent, you know, she says to this day, we spent a couple of weeks and we would just go out and eat and talk and try to get to know her and take her shopping and try to help her fix her room and things like that. Really just trying to engage her, which is really now what I teach people. Just try to create a relationship with kids at the beginning. That's it. They're coming in. They're terrified. They don't know who you are. They don't know what you want, what you're up to and stuff like that. So she was there for a little while alone. Ultimately, you know, they call me with other kids and all straight kids. So I said, all right, whatever. So just bring them on. I'll try to deal my best with them and stuff like that. And to this day, Jennifer says, you know, she should have been the only one. The rest of them ruined her life. They ruined her life. So it was, you know, it was really messy for 6 months because I really didn't know what I was doing. But finally, you know, what I say is that the girls taught me what they needed from me was simply to sort of be committed to them, to be there, not to be like everybody else had been and just be temporary and conditional and get rid of them if they misbehaved. There was a point at which a number of the girls would do things. They'd steal money or jewelry or something like that and run away. And I didn't know, you know, what was going on. So when I was able to reconnect with a couple of them, I would say, so, you know, did I do something wrong? What could I have done better? And, I was trying to learn. And they said, no, actually, you know what it was? It was too good to be true. Mm-hmm. It was not going to last. So we decided to sort of have a little bit of control over our situation for once. So we decided we were going to do what we do, steal as much as we could, and leave before you threw us out. So what it really taught me, like it was a real wake-up call, that they don't expect you to keep them.
No.
Their experience has been they're going to be put out for some behavior.
Well, because they have been put out.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. They do anything that's outside of the bounds of what somebody wants or if somebody finds acceptable behavior. So all of their placements are conditional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them have been there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Most of them came in as young kids. Sometimes they would go home for small periods of time, but they'd come back in again.
Yep.
So almost all of my kids were in from a very young age. Many, many kids spend their life bouncing around. Some of them get adopted at some point. But then we have what we call broken adoptions because the kids, they tend to adopt younger kids or toddlers or something. And they have this imaginary picture of what it's going to be like and how they are going to be as parents and the kids are going to be perfect. And then the kids become teenagers or they identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender or something as they get older. And people just say, well, I didn't opt for that. And I'm not putting up this behavior and stuff. And it was a while before I learned about this whole category of older kids that get recycled and put back in the system.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're willing to work with us. Two of my kids were adopted, were legally adopted.
By you?
No, before
me.
Oh, and were given back.
And were put back when they became problematic. They were,
oh, my goodness.
They were
too much trouble. Can you imagine?
No. And the idea that they're willing, and we work with other, you know, kids other than mine, that we do work with a lot of kids other than mine. But we, in fact,
you have a lot.
I wasn't a You Gotta Believe family, and I didn't get my kids through You Gotta Believe. I had my kids before that. So, but one of them had been adopted as a young kid, and she was in the home 8 years, and the adoptive mother just said, you know, you're too much trouble.
I mean, that's outrageous.
Put her back. It is.
It's one thing in 6 months if a kid's like, you know, doing really, really incredibly violent behavior.
Right.
But 8 years, it's like, that's called just like parenting.
Right.
I mean, should I give my kids back because one of my kids is being difficult?
Right.
No, that's not fair.
And people don't think about that with their birth kids. They deal with whatever. And that's what I try to train people. We need people who are going to commit to these kids like their birth children. Whatever behaviors come up, you deal with it.
Yeah.
You just handle
it. That's parenting.
Right. Right.
Hey, Robin, you know, I recently flew to LA, right?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
And I was kid free. So obviously I wanted it to be a really special experience. So you know what I did?
What?
I brought my Ember Wave.
Amazing.
The first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
I love Ember Wave. So did it help?
It did. It was great, actually. So Ember Wave works like a mini air conditioner and a heater. Mm-hmm. It transfers heat either away from your skin or towards your skin through a lot of science that I do not understand. Mm-hmm. All I know is I put it on my wrist, I push a button, and when I was cold on the plane, it warmed me up. And when I was hot, it cooled me down.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Oh my God. I love it for at the end of the day, Ember Wave, it helps me fall asleep because it has a sleep mode.
Right.
And then it just helps you maintain a comfortable temp as you like slowly drift off to sleep. Mm-hmm, I've been using it for sleep and it's really just helped me.
Oh, that's good. Did you know that most public places have a temperature that is comfortable for only 80% of the population? That's crazy. And so most people are just uncomfortable, which can lead to lost productivity, increased stress levels, and can be mentally exhausting, which I definitely am.
Oh my God. There's mentally just like exhausted. Loads of places the Ember Wave would be helpful over air conditioned offices, restaurants, airplanes. I mean, I used it at a football game when I was outside because I was freezing and it worked like a miracle.
Oh, that's good. Well, guess what else about what? Ember Wave? What? They were named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018. And Ember Wave has been reviewed by a number of leading technical publications. I like it a lot. I really do.
Well, folks, you heard it here. Don't be cold on a plane again.
No.
And for our listeners, Ember Wave is having a special Black Friday Cyber Monday sale. Ooh. Listeners get $60 off if they go to emberwave.com/OCT. That's emberwave.com/OCT.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
For the Ember Wave Black Friday Cyber Monday sale, listeners get $60 off if they go to emberwave.com/OCT. That's emberwave.com/OCT. But so let's, you've touched on it. So let's go into now where you are and what you're doing and how we got, really, how we got in contact with you.
And you got to believe you started to talk about that.
Right.
Tell us about that.
So I did this on my own with another agency and stuff like that. And I guess I was speaking somewhere. There was an initiative, I think, at ACS at the time called
ACS is
Administration for Children's Services. Sorry, they oversee all of foster care in New
York.
Those
are the ones who will come into the home and say, we're going to take this child or not.
Yeah, my kids have not threatened to call ACS yet, but they probably will.
A lot of kids know about that. Yeah, a lot of kids know about that.
I'll call ACS.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I am always saying I thought somebody was going to call ACS because my daughter was screaming.
Oh, yeah.
So terrible. Yeah. You know, like that's my joke with ACS. Yeah. But there's, it's not funny at all.
Right.
It's not funny. But
see, but they won't. I have to say, they won't do it because you're white.
So there's a huge, systemic racism is big.
Yes.
Right. So let's. It's
socioeconomic and cultural reasons that people are targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And judgments are made that would not apply to other people.
Truly.
Yeah.
And people are struggling to raise their kids. They're trying to work. So they leave their
kids home alone.
Jobs. Yes. And so, you know, that's found out. And so they're removed. And they don't ask for help because they expect their kids to be taken from them. Because everybody says, you know, well, there are services. They're terrified
because
of authorities.
Because somebody will take them.
Yeah.
Because they've seen that happen over
Over and over. And even for a day, a child removed for even a day is a trauma they will never get over.
I can't even imagine.
Their fundamental foundation, their safety, their security is ripped apart.
Yeah.
You know, there have been articles in the New York Times about it. And there was a girl, for some reason, I think she was taken for maybe a day, maybe 2 days. When she returned home, she had nightmares. She stopped doing well in school. Mm. It's just something you don't, how can you sleep after that? I can't imagine it.
The idea of safety is gone.
Gone.
You know, because it is like an illusion.
Right.
You know, this idea, like, I mean, I think I had a parent, a therapist say that to me one time, this whole idea of like, you never blame your parent for things that are going on in the house, because if you did, the idea that you're safe would be gone.
Right.
And so that takes that away.
Right.
You know, like that if someone comes in, you know, your parents can't save you.
Exactly.
And that's not a lesson you need to learn that abruptly.
Right. No. And it's a fundamental way we grow up, feeling safe and secure and stuff like that from, you know, the time babies are fed by, you know, someone that they learn to control, you know, hey, come feed me, come feed me.
Yeah.
And that's then a good way.
Yeah, they do. Babies definitely control their parents. Yeah. And then they have to go through, there's a protocol when kids are removed, what the birth parents have to do. And it's an extremely difficult process. And there's a gap between when they get to see their kids again.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, the kids have got to be freaking out. So, you know, there's all this. And then if they were working, all the things they have to do interfere with their work schedules because they have to do parent training and stuff. You can't.
Yeah. And your hourly job is not like, you leaving for in the middle of it to go do a test.
No, absolutely not. So there are a lot of efforts afoot over the past number of years to do a lot more preventive services. So you know, trying to keep the kids. If there is something identified, try to provide service, try to help the family to not remove the kids. That really should be the last resort. And yet, you know, it doesn't look as though the numbers of removals are really going down as much as one would hope.
Can I ask, in your particular household with all your children, how many of your children had parents who just had like a minor slip up and they were working so hard, you know, like, is right. there, what's the story there? I mean, I'm sure you had, mm-hmm. you've run the gamut, I'm right. sure.
So I wound up with a sibling group of five.
Wait, five siblings?
Yeah, but
at least they were together.
Well, that wasn't the plan either. Oh, so the way that happened, they called me, they told me they had a girl who had to be removed on an emergency basis from the foster home she was in. So I said, okay. And
well, hey, by the way, Mary, how many bedrooms do you have left open in there? You got four more?
So they told me they had this girl. And I said, okay, you know, whatever, I'll take her. She and her friend, who wound up coming the next day, but she and her friend were in a home. So I said, okay. So her social worker was driving her up to my place. And on the way, she's asking about my house and blah, blah, blah. And all she said, you know, are there men there and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, you know, whatever they told her. And they said, she was asking, do they have other room? Can she take the other girl who's left behind, who was with me? And they had only been, I think, living together for like 2 weeks, but they really, really bonded. Mm-hmm. So she gets to the house and, you know, she right away looks around. She says, okay, this, I can make this work. Do you have room for another girl? I said, well, yeah, look around. So it was the second girl who, it turns out, has seven siblings. So they did come into care. So six of them, one of them is actually older, but six of them wound up camping out at my house the first couple of nights they were in care because there was no place to put them. But the reason I said, you know, we're definitely not taking all these kids, partially because some of them were too young. They were much too young for me.
Well, how was the youngest?
The youngest was about five at the time.
Oh, my God.
And so...
But you have to be able to do dishes in this house, my friend. There's too many of us.
Dress yourself and wash and bathe yourself and stuff like that.
There's the schedule on the door.
I don't do... There was in the window in the kitchen. But I don't do any of that stuff. But the main reason was because the one that had come to me first was so... We call it parentified. That she was so busy taking care of all of them that she hadn't done anything. She had not stepped foot inside a high school.
She needed.
And she was 17.
She got her GED. She's very, very, very bright. But she did not. So she wasn't taking care of herself. She was focused on them. So I said, no.
Because she would
stop.
Going to stop. She would be mom.
Right. So they found other placements. Ultimately, I took another three of them. I couldn't take the younger ones because of the relationship that the father had with the older ones. So in that mix, the younger of the other three was a boy, and I was working with him. At that time, I was working with You Gotta Believe, and I was working to find him a dad. I thought he needed a dad, and so I would bring him to events. I would try to introduce him to dads, and he would totally ignore me. I had him hooked up with somebody at one point, sort of a coach, and trying to get them to visit. And then his sisters kept begging me. They kept begging me. They said, come on, you got to take him. He really should be with us. And yada. And he's not really a boy. He's our brother. It doesn't count. I said, what? So then we were all going to, so I worked it out with his group home where he was at the time. And so we were all going to Disney World. And I had a van. So I told him I got permission for him to come with us. And so I picked him up from his group home and we all took off. And, you know, somewhere along the line in the trip.
This is a sitcom.
Wait, you drove from here?
Yeah. We drove down.
All of you in a van to Disney is just, yeah. I mean, I'm going to need photos of this.
I know.
For our social.
Are there photos?
Wait, it wasn't that many at the time. It was only a nine-passenger van.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, we're going to need pictures, Mary.
It was only a nine-passenger van.
Your job when you leave here is to get pictures of the Disney trip and please send them to us.
So we somewhere along the line, we told him that he wasn't going back to the group home. I had made arrangements and stuff.
And
so that was my first son.
Now, you've mentioned You Gotta Believe several times.
Yes.
And we need to know. Tell us what You Gotta Believe is.
I better, or else I might get fired. Yes.
Mary, I got to tell you something. Ain't nobody firing you. No. Ain't nobody firing you.
You know what? I want to call, can we call you Mother Mary?
I was just going to say Mama Mary.
Mama Mary, Mother Mary.
Mama Mary.
So that's
I feel like that might be the name of this episode.
Do people call you
People
that?
Call me Mother Mary, yes.
Mother Mary.
A lot, yes. Okay. And I was I was supposed to be a nun, I know.
Oh my.
Well, you're Irish Catholic.
I'm psychic.
Jamie, you know how important it is, and we always talk about this, mm-hmm. how important it is to have organic products that are accessible to you in this day and age.
Yeah, totally. Right?
Well, I have a new one for the ladies, L. That's the letter L.
L.
It's a period and personal care company that makes organic period products, and it doesn't have any of those ingredients that you can't pronounce. They only use certified cotton.
Ooh. Tell me more. Listen, I never realized how many random things are in your everyday mm-hmm. tampon. I mean, we put these things inside of us, ladies. We need to wise up.
Well, listen, Elle makes tampons, pads, and liners with organic cotton because they believe a natural product just makes sense for a natural process.
Natural. I love it. Mm-hmm. So they don't use pesticides, chlorine, fragrances, dyes.
Nope.
None of that.
And you will love this. Mm-hmm. They make an award-winning organic period care products that are easily accessible to you and the women around the world who need them. Because for every L product that you purchase, one is made accessible to a woman or a girl who needs it. And that's so important.
A company who pays it forward. Mm-hmm. Go L.
Yeah. And Jamie, here's the beauty. To date, they've made over 200 million products accessible. And that's and counting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you get L, you're part of helping that movement grow.
I need to become a part of this movement. Let's take care of the ladies in the world.
And also you can find L by going to your local Target. And honestly, it's the best looking packaging on the shelf. You got to look for a clear canister with a gold lid or white bags with a large gold circle on the front.
Or get your L Organic tampons, pads, and liners right now by going to thisisl.com/OCT. That's thisisl.com/OCT.
The words this is and the letter L.com/OCT. Go get it, ladies. You're doing something good.
Good.
So what is You Gotta Believe?
You Gotta Believe is an older child adoption agency. Its only purpose is to match kids in foster care with permanent, unconditionally committed families. What everybody else takes for granted and what everybody else needs. So there are lots and lots of kids in care who wind up not being reunified with their family, which is what everybody wants. But there are many reasons it doesn't happen. So as they get older, originally adoptions were just infants. Eventually the ages crept up a little bit. And then, you know, okay, so you adopt a five-year-old. And even now up to maybe 10 or 12 is not that unusual that kids are adopted. When you look at national statistics, after 12, it just drops significantly.
Nobody wants a 14-year-old.
No.
Well, because all you're paying for is college and they're broken.
And they're too broken. They're damaged. They're, you know, all of this
stuff. Is it the perception
stuff.
Or is that the truth?
That's the perception. So the longer they're in care, the more they're hurt.
Sure.
So I say everything that is so-called wrong with them is that they're hurt little kids. Yep. They've been hurt by everybody down the line. And so they just want somebody to fix them.
Yeah.
And to fix them, you have to stick around. You have to put up with the behaviors. You have to put up with the challenges. If you think about being from home to home to home, you're not getting better with each move. You're getting harder and more hurt. And hurt comes out usually in anger or a disruptive behavior.
But also more and more closed off.
Yes,
like you are walls. I did a lot of volunteering with this organization called Youth at Risk. It's now called Unlocking Futures. But the kids would do these like year-long intensive mentoring programs and they would test you.
Yes.
They would test you. The first round was just, let me see how much I can make you buy me.
Yes.
And then because they know you're going. Yes. So I'm going to try to get as much out of you as I can really quickly.
Yeah.
And then the next phase was like emotional.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to do stuff to try to hurt you because I know you're going to leave me.
Absolutely.
So I have to prove it.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
They didn't know what to do when you stayed.
Right. Right. No, they're totally confused.
Because they're not used to it.
Exactly. Totally confused by that. And they look at you like, you know, what's wrong with you? And then they think, well, okay, I just didn't do enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to up the ante. Yes.
And it gets crazier. And it's a very surreal experience to sit in that.
Yes.
And to just be like, nope, I am going to stay. And their behavior is not good, but I am going to stay.
Right.
Well, I have to say, it takes a really I don't want to say special, but it takes a big person to be able to stay through it.
We do a workshop. Our advocates do a workshop. Advocates who are alumni of the foster care system do workshops for parents and called Q-Tip. Quit taking it personal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is not about you. They don't care about you. You don't mean anything to them. They just are protecting themselves by pushing you away.
Because they've been hurt.
Right. And so if, you know, and you're right, as they push you and you stay, they just think there's something wrong with you. But eventually you wear them down.
Yes. That's but it. You have to be willing to you wear have them to, down.
Yeah.
It's really heartwarming that there are people out there like you who can not take it personal and just stay there and be there. It's hard. It's even hard for me to do it with my 5-year-old who's mine.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm like, it is. Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for people who are confused by like the mission of You Gotta Believe and like, tell us like, how does this work?
So we
and it's local, right?
It's New York City. We encourage people, you know, my thing is, have you ever thought about being a parent? Would you like to be a parent? Have you gotten to a point in your life where you may not have your own biological kids or you don't want to have, like me, you don't want to have your biological kids? We will help you figure out if this is for you or not. We invite people in to learn about it. We do classes. We do classes in Brooklyn. We do classes at the Lesbian Gay Community Center in Manhattan. We do classes in Long Island at the Lesbian Gay Community Center there. And the reason we're at those centers actually is because the lesbian gay community are really wonderful targets because they don't have children usually in the, I don't want to say normal way, traditional way. So that, you know, this is a absolutely perfect way for them. And they are
and
they're six times more likely to do foster care and 4 times more likely to adopt than the straight community.
Interesting.
They're a fabulous target for us. So we,
I love that
so,
you call them targets.
Yes,
I
they're targets. We absolutely
like,
want
you're
them.
You're like Mother Mary, like, I'm putting a baby in your home, put a kid in your home, put a kid in your home.
Not only is she Mother Mary, she is the stork.
We absolutely
come to bring babies.
I absolutely am trying. And that's the reason I started to work for You Gotta Believe, frankly. By that point, it had been a couple of years, and I had a lot of kids, and I realized I single-handedly could not solve the problem that I wanted to solve.
I love that you tried, though.
Which was finding these kids all, you know, parents. So I met You Gotta Believe. Pat O'Brien, the founder, met me. I was speaking somewhere. And he said, so you're doing, and what they were doing was my personal mission. So I said, oh my God, this is a perfect fit. So he said, well, so you don't really like making as much money as you do. Don't you want to do something really, really more beautiful with your life? So
wait,
I said,
wait, Mary, what did you do before?
I was a healthcare consultant.
Oh, okay.
I was in healthcare for a long time.
You're like, can I have both? Like my salary and do beautiful things?
Yeah. No, apparently not. He was very clear about that. He said, so why don't you come work for me?
You'll make less money.
Yeah, but you'll be so happy. You'll be, you know, and I said, well, I will find more parents for more kids because I can't take them anymore. And so, you know, so it worked out perfectly.
And it was
so
your mission.
That was 15 years ago.
Wow.
So I've been there ever since. So we train people and we help them figure out, it truly is not for everybody. But, you know, for me, it's really about
what's
service.
Not for everybody,
being
fostering
a parent,
or being a parent?
Being a parent.
It really isn't.
It isn't.
It's definitely not. But
like early Tuesday, it was not for me.
But
and I've got two.
It is for more people than I think people want to do it. To me, the system, there are a lot of people who want to do it. There are 8,000 kids in foster care in New York City. And that sounds like a big number, but there are over 8 million people. So it's really a very small number. And I
would
think,
have thought it was higher. Yeah.
No, it's only 8,000 right now. So the, you know, and many of them will
and you
wind
have 14
up going
of those
home.
8,
many of them will wind up going home. Yeah. So then there's still a smaller number and some will be adopted. So what we focus on are the ones who are not going home, don't get adopted by that age at which it stops being so appealing. And those are the kids, they need a family. Mm. Nobody should go through life. There's federal legislation which says every kid in care should have a family or a parent before they leave. And yet that is so watered down, it doesn't happen. And instead, you know, it's just, well, we'll give them help or something like that. But they need a parent. They need a
and
parent
what
for
is
a
that
lifetime.
Age? What is that age?
Yeah.
They age out in New York at 21. And in a lot of states, they still age out at 18.
And can you imagine going to get your first apartment with no guidance?
No one.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
What's the age range of kids that you're working with? Like 14 to 21 or?
Yeah, we tend to work, a lot of the kids that we work with are the upper edge that are trying, you know, almost about to drop off a cliff, I say, you know, mm-hmm. when they age out of care. But people, we've matched as young as 8, because some people do want the younger kids and stuff. You know, my thing about younger kids is our older kids are really emotionally younger kids.
Yeah,
they've right. missed so much in their life. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, I can give you a 17-year-old who's 5 on a bad day. So you get to do... You get to go through all those developmental stages with them again because they never experienced childhood in the usual way. And so we teach that to people during the classes and, you know, they get to do that. But we will find people, younger kids. And for me, finding younger kids is perfect because I call it killing the pipeline to getting to us at the older ages.
Is the goal adoption for the, like, I mean, you have an 18-year-old. Is the goal to have them adopted? Like, so what's the goal?
It depends. And we're, although we're an adoption agency, we don't necessarily talk a lot about legal adoption. Some kids may want it. Some kids may not. It has a lot of negative connotations for kids because to some of them, the experience they've seen, maybe siblings who were adopted by a family, they didn't then allow any contact. They lose a name. They may feel disloyal to their birth family. Mm-hmm. They may feel they'll lose their siblings and stuff like that. So we talk about moral adoption, and we're thinking about changing that terminology, but that was created by Pat O'Brien, as far as I know. And it really means it's up to the parent to make a commitment, mm-hmm. permanent unconditional commitment. So some of my kids are legally adopted because that's what they wanted. Others are just as much my kids. We don't have a paper to say they're my kids. And some of them actually still would be legally adopted if I had time to do the paperwork. But adult adoptions are actually easier. Most of mine, with the exception of my one son who I took to Disney, he wanted to be adopted right away.
Of course he did.
He wasn't
like,
waiting.
He was like, I got in this van. He was like, I am signed on the dotted line, Mary.
He's the only one who got adopted while he was still in care. The others got adopted as adults. And part of that is also, you know, if you're getting a check until the kid is 21.
Yeah.
So some of it is also, well, you're getting paid to take care of
right.
him. Imagine what that
feels
like.
Let me see how you are at the end. Yeah, totally.
Imagine what that feels. So some of them, I think, were just waiting to see, how committed was I? And when the check stopped and I was still there, you know, they figured, okay.
What's so crazy to me is that they were still testing you
after
all that time to
of
see
course.
If you might leave them. Just the scars.
There cannot be trust. And again, you know, if they were in a home before, at least two of them were in homes for 8 years that disrupted. One had been adopted. The other was not legally adopted. Was supposed to be adopted. Was down south. And something happened in the home and she had to be removed and brought back to New York after 8 years. So, you know, I think about, like, for the first 8 years, there was no way she could trust me. Either
like
one
my
of them.
Son is 8. That would be his entire life. Yes.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
All the things that have happened, that's everything he is.
Yeah. Right. And to be removed and moved and relocated.
And now you're with Jan.
Somebody else.
Like, just that's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. You just reminded me, my first lesbian that I got, finally.
Oh, you got one. Oh, good. We got to that.
I did not see that coming. I'm sorry. Snorted in the mic.
The 8 years. I know you were talking about your son and you, whatever. But no, the 8 year thing is what reminded me. So they finally called me one day. I don't know how many kids I had at the time, but they called me one day and they said, okay, we have a lesbian for you. I said, oh, yes. Okay. Where is she? When can I get her? So they told me the reason. So it really winds up, it's a tragic, so it's, you know, a combination of things. I was thrilled, but she had to be removed from a home where she had been either 6 or 8 years. She was 16 at the time, and she had to be removed because she kissed her girlfriend in front of the foster mother's 5-year-old daughter or something like that. And so I said, well, okay, whatever the situation is, you know, I want her. So I go to pick her up. and go inside, and, you know, the girl has her stuff packed and the woman is washing dishes or something like that. And I'm just watching them like I'm some kind of outside observer and stuff. And there's like no emotion between
from them. Any of them.
Nobody. So she had, as I say, she'd been there either 6 or 8 years. So we go outside, you know, the woman says bye and the girl comes out and I walk out to the car with her and I'm crying. She's showing no emotion. The woman is clearly showing no emotion. I said, you weren't connected to her at all? She said, no, I was just there. All that time. Imagine those, what formative years those were, you know, from about 10, 8 or 10 to 16.
Yeah, to just be ignored.
And to just be in a home and just, the woman was just getting a check and she was just getting room and board. And that's what a lot of people do with teens. You know, they give them room and board. So
they
that
need
was
so much more than that.
Yeah, obviously. But that, so that was my first lesbian, but it was a tragic, you know, way that it happened.
In terms of like people who want to do this, they're hearing what you're saying, mm-hmm. like, but they're in New York or they're not in New York. What do they do? Like, how do they get in touch with you? How do they, I mean, we're blowing up your spot, Mary.
Good, good, good. Check out our website, www.yougottabelieve.org. We have a listing of our classes, where they are, when they are. You can register for a class. You can call me. My number, my email address are on there. All of our staff's email phone numbers are on there. But we really want you, if you ever thought about becoming a parent, if you ever tried the foster care system and reached out and either had a bad experience or didn't get a call back or anything, when you call us, you will get a call back probably from more than one person. When you register for one of our classes, you'll get multiple people emailing you back asking, you know, do you have additional questions and stuff like that. We treat everybody who reaches out to us like gold because you're a precious resource and a potential parent for a kid. You're a potential lifesaver to us. Yeah. And so we want to help you. And we hold your hand because this is a very confusing process. We hold your hand from the beginning. We help you get licensed, do the classes, get licensed. We help you throughout with questions. Our alumni, the advocates who were in foster care, co-facilitate all of the classes. And parents, adoptive parents, teach the classes. I teach one of the classes. But all of our staff that work with families and kids are what we call credible messengers. They've lived experience. So this is really a passion for all of us. You know, some agencies will eliminate you at the beginning because you don't have an extra bedroom. Nobody in New York has an extra bedroom sitting around collecting dust, the craft
true.
Room.
Very
no,
true.
They
no,
don't have that.
It's a myth.
So I don't care, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't care if you're couch surfing right now. Come and take the classes. If you decide you want to do this, you'll get a place. Mm-hmm.
Now, we're a global podcast. Those people, what's the You Got? How do they find out about the You Gotta Believe of Iowa?
They can, people can always reach out to us, and we do try to find, our founder is particularly good at knowing nationally where there are similar organizations. A lot of times, you know, they're not. But I think, you know, we encourage people. I always say sort of try to ignore the noise that you may experience in a bureaucracy mm-hmm. and just think about the fact you want to be a parent and you want to help a kid.
I think I speak for Jamie, and Jamie will echo this, but we are in love with you.
Yes, Mother Mary. Mother Mary.
I thank you so much.
Yeah.
Just seriously, thank you so much.
I was thrilled to have this opportunity. I love spreading the word, and I really do encourage people, if you've ever thought about becoming a parent and you don't want to give birth or you haven't given birth or you pass the point of giving birth and stuff like that, come find out about it. Don't let them, you know, the stuff certainly in terms of foster care agencies and barriers, don't let that stop you. Come mm-hmm. to You Gotta Believe and find out about it. Mm-hmm. But I think it will be the most powerful, the most positive thing you'll do in the end. You know, there are certainly challenges and I don't,
that's
you
parenting.
Know, minimize those, right. Yeah. But it's the most rewarding thing you could possibly do. If you're willing to just give and not expect anything in return, in the end, like where I'm at now, the rewards are just, they're overwhelming what I get from my kids now.
Wow, Mother Mary.
I mean,
I love her.
She's the best.
What a wonderful person she is.
She just is. I just loved how she just chopped liver. Didn't want to say how many kids she had. I love that.
She's so good. Oh, Mother Mary. Thanks for coming, Mother Mary. You lightened our lives a bit. Okay, so on another note, we wanted to let you guys know about another parenting podcast we thought you might enjoy. Yes. It's a show called Raising Rebels.
And it centers around Black or people of color who are parents. And it's hosted by Nalika Rodway. And she is a mother of three and an educator who thinks a lot about how oppressed parents can raise free children.
So you should go back and binge season one, because there's actually an episode about raising queer kids too in mm-hmm. that season. And then you can get right into season two, which just premiered with an episode on queer parenting. So
I mean,
love
is that a fit or is that a fit?
That's right. So if you're a fan of this show here, our little show, then we think you're going to like Raising Rebels. So go listen.
Yeah, go check them out, folks.
Cool.
So, all right then. So this has been a big show.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
But let's keep the conversation going. You can join us on social.
You can join our community on Patreon, patreon.com/ovariestalk, where yep. there's all kinds of extra content.
Yep. And we are Ovaries Talk on Twitter.
Ovaries_talk on Insta.
And If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook.
Join our community there and you can talk to our listeners, which is so fun.
Okay.
And then guess what? We have a huge announcement.
For those of you who actually stayed to the very end, we were not lying.
Next week, Rosie O'Donnell is here to talk with us.
So get your ass back.
OMG, Rosie O'Donnell, guys. Rosie fucking O'Donnell.
So thank you to our sponsors, Beauty Counter, Ember, and This Is Elle. You guys, you're making this show possible. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jamie, should we wrap it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Eggs.
Ovaries. Out. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.